This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Now, talking about the big Hall of Fame weekend. Of course, the tour rolls into Chapel Hill today and Louisville on Monday. So that's that story. But, Mr. Durham, we still got some work to do in this final hour. We got some stuff to attend
here. Mm-hmm. Best and worst case scenarios coming up here in just a second. Don't forget, we started the show today by telling you that Edgerrin James will become the ninth different Miami player to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Packer said, toward the end of the show, we're going to give you the list, and you're going to be surprised who is near the top with Miami in the ACC.
It's a good bar bet. It's a great ACC football.
You think there's a real surprise here, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I think some folks are going to be surprised to see what it is. But we'll give you the whole breakdown as far as your favorite ACC team in terms of putting individuals into Canton. And, of course, that list from Miami is so impressive. I mean, goodness gracious. You go through those nine names and you go, oh, my goodness. I mean, and, you know, it's kind of cool to go through and kind of reminisce through that kind of stuff too, Wes. Because you start thinking immediately of great games, great players, unbelievable moments, and so forth. So, should be a tremendous weekend. But, again, congratulations to the four that have ACC ties going into Canton. All well-deserved.
Absolutely. All right. Yep. All right. Best and worst-case scenarios. Here we go. We got five schools left, and all of these are pretty intriguing. In fact, the three we did at the start were intriguing. And these eight, though – and we know we're not doing everybody, but not everybody falls into this kind of examination. You know, on the side, we call these Packer and Durham investigations, if you will. All right, let's go to Pittsburgh here. We've talked about, you know, Kenny Pickett in 36 starts. We talked about, you know, the depth at running back. Pat Narduzzi told us earlier this week he likes where they are, you know, just about in every phase of the game. You look at the schedule. Week two just flies off the page, doesn't it, Pack? I mean, because you beat Tennessee, and then all of a sudden, you know, October 16th, Virginia Tech, you're 5-0 going into Blacksburg. You win that, and then all of a sudden you get Clemson, you know, potentially undefeated. Then you're looking at 10. I mean, that's a 10-win potential. You start like that, I think.
Well, if you're a really good football team, you're supposed to be Tennessee because they're not. But that will be a test to be over 100,000 there. Kenny Pickett and the boys will roll in the Rocky Top, see what that's all about. A little ACC-SEC action. But I think this schedule sets up for Pittsburgh that if you're going to have a year in which, number one, you're healthy, the ball bounces the right way offensively, should be able to score a lot of points. You know Pat Narduzzi loves to play defense. If you're thinking, hey, best case scenario, I don't think it's crazy to think that this team can win double digits.
Yeah.
I don't. But, you know, that second week when you go to Tennessee, if you're that kind of team, you just take care of business. Just go, hey, yeah, it's really cool. Nice fight song, too, by the way. Give a treat to the hound. We're just here to beat your brains in. So, again, you get a chance to walk it, right? Anybody can talk it in August. You get a chance to walk it in September. But, you know, road trips in the second half of the season at Duke and at Syracuse – this schedule lays out well for Pittsburgh. If things are going to be terrific this year, I don't think it's a crazy reach to think that they could get to double digits.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Are we really hinging the fortunes of Pitt football on 60 minutes in Knoxville?
No.
Is it that much of a premium in your mind?
No, but if you're going to be good, that's got to be a W. It's got to be a W. Because if you're not good enough to beat Tennessee, I got news for you. All of a sudden, those road trips to Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. Oh, by the way, Clemson and Miami are coming to your house.
Yeah.
Those become humongous problems. I mean, if you're not capable of taking care of business and beating a team like Tennessee who's down like that in that kind of environment, then, hey, all bets are off. But they're going to get great opportunities. Yeah. When you've got Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, I mean, the three teams that everybody's talked about as far as the Atlantic Coast Conference's three best teams. No disrespect to NC State fans, but those are the three that people are buzzing about. Clemson, North Carolina, Miami. Pitt gets all of them at home. So, like I said, you could not script a better case scenario from a scheduling standpoint if you're Pittsburgh to think that, guess what? We can have a really, really special year.
Yeah. By the way, FPI predicts 7.2 on the projected wins for Pittsburgh. So there's the thought on the Panthers. Let's go to Winston-Salem. I mean, you want optimism? We can show you some optimism now, because you play it out straight here, and if you're Dave Clawson, in the perfect world, you are 8-0 through October, going to Chapel Hill on November the 6th, Pac. I mean, in all honesty, you can win all of those.
That would be technically true. I'm going to go, though, back to this game. We've harped on this before. I think Florida State on September the 18th is a litmus test game for both of them. For the Noles, number one, to take it on the road. Can you win? Going to Switzerland, we'll see. And if you're Wake Forest, to get off to a blistering start, that's, to me, that's the game. Because I do expect them to beat Old Dominion and Norfolk State. They'll be 2-0. You know, now here come the Noles. Now what can you do with them? But the potential for the Deacs is a good one to get off to a great, great start. But I think that Florida State game is a key one.
Yeah, and by the way, I would add at Virginia and Louisville behind it.
Of course.
And weird things happen when they play on the road at Syracuse, too. I mean, so now all of a sudden, that 8-0 optimism, you're kind of thinking, well, wait a second, pump the brakes. This is why Wake Forest was perfect for this drill, because you see the best case, you also see the worst case.
Right.
I mean, that's how fragile the line might be for Coach Clawson and the Deacons, who, by the way, FPI has at the venerable 6.4 projected win total here.
Whatever on that. But, you know, the Florida State game, though, Wes, sets up Virginia and Louisville, right? I mean, yeah. Florida, you know, if you lose the Florida State game at home, hey, you know what? All of a sudden, Virginia and Louisville become real issues in terms of, hey, you know, what kind of team do we really have? You know, you beat Florida State at home. Hey, next thing you know, you're 3-0 looking around going, hey, why not us? Why not us getting off to, you know, a something right. an O start before we get into, you know, early November? So, again, it's such a fragile line with a lot of these teams, and that's why it's kind of a fun thing to do best of, worst of. And it's not everything's going to be great for everybody. There are going to be some teams that get bad breaks, unhealthy situations from an injury standpoint, and all of a sudden everything's uphill. But there will be a team or two out of this group that has a season that you go, guess what? I mean, good stuff happened to us, and we're, you know what? We got a pretty good football team. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Boston College, because I think both of us believe that BC and NC State, in one order or another, are the two challengers right now in the Atlantic to Clemson. Fair?
Yes, agreed.
All right. So you look at the September 25th game against Missouri. Now, folks in the Northeast will tell you, you know, Temple, you just don't know. I mean, you kind of got to see what the Owls are about. It's been a bit of a struggle since Jeff Collins left, but nonetheless, September 25th at home against Missouri. You come out of that 4-0. You get at Clemson and NC State in a three-week span. Is that kind of where the best case and the worst case turn their pack?
Yes. That Missouri game to me is really important. Another ACC-SEC matchup, just like we talked with Pitt at Tennessee. I even mentioned NC State at Mississippi State week two. That game kind of feels like the same thing. And I think that's a good test, too, because I think both schools are about in the same spot in their respective leagues in terms of how good they think they can be. But that a win against Missouri, if BC all of a sudden is sitting there with a zero and they're making the road trip to Death Valley, game on. So we'll find out what's going on. And again, Boston College should be completely comfortable knowing that they get to go to Clemson, because it seems like they've been there for 10 straight years playing that game. But I think Missouri sets the tone for them in terms of, hey, okay, are you ready to really jump in the deep end of the pool? Let's see where it goes. But Missouri, I think, sets the tone for that whole deal.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, and I think it's weird to say these non-conference games carry that kind of collateral, but honestly, I do believe they do in the case of the two schools we're talking about in Pittsburgh and Boston College. By the way, FPI's got them at 7.1. So we'll keep an eye on the Eagles early. All right. NC State, the red and white. In a perfect world, you're 3-0 going to Clemson.
Clemson goes to State.
Even then, if you split the you split BC Miami, maybe you get Louisville at home, pair of road wins to start November. You beat the heels in Raleigh. Whoa, wait a second, you're 9-3 or 10-2. But I bet you're going to talk about 60 Minutes in Starkville, America, aren't you?
I just mentioned, we just gave you three straight games. Pitt at Tennessee, Missouri, Boston College, NC State at Mississippi State. Yeah, it'll be a big deal about Miami playing Bama and Clemson playing Georgia. But as far as these kind of games, I think these are all tone setters for teams that are looking to bust through and have big years. And for NC State, hey, you're going to take on an SEC team on the road. All right, tag, you're it. You're talking about a mental state. Hey, you can go win that game. Mentally, you're like, hey, man, we're ready to go play anybody in the country, including Clemson, who comes to our house late September. For NC State, if the ball bounces right, could they win 9 or 10 games or more? I think so. I do. But if it turns out that, hey, you stub your toe in Stark Vegas and Clemson's still got your number and you got two losses in October, well, then we'll find out about the maturity of this football team.
Right, and then you got roadies at BC, Miami by November. I mean, we have no idea where Florida State will be in November. Are they, you know, ascending or descending or flattening? I mean, how's that work? That's the beauty of the football season. I mean, look at what happened to NC State last year. You lose at Virginia Tech and heads are down, and all of a sudden life changes on a back shoulder throw from Devin Leary to Emeka Emezi that beats Pittsburgh on the road.
Right.
So, again, this is a team, though, that has the kind of sneaky competitive depth. They've got multiplayer positions, especially at running back and wide receiver. Looks like the offensive line has kind of developed some things here. This is going to be a very, very interesting football team to watch. Just so happens that so's Boston College, and they've got 60 minutes of football in the Southeastern Conference on a road game. Pittsburgh, same way. I think it provides a tremendous kind of litmus test. And you mentioned for these teams, and we're not talking about Clemson here. We're not talking about, you know, Carolina here, right? Or Louisville in particular case of the ACC-SEC situation. What we are talking about, though, are teams in the ACC. And, Mark, you know this from doing the afternoon show. If the ACC goes and wins these games, especially the one at Knoxville and the one at Starkville, you're talking about the brand of the league being seen differently, too. And that's one of the things we're going to come back to in the month of September.
Yeah, I've said from day one, you want to change the narrative. You pick a scenario that you want to change the narrative. There's only one way to do it. That is you have to go out, compete, and win games. And for an Atlantic Coast Conference, which has always been – I said this the other day. I saw Joey Galloway the other day talking about, no, the ACC is terrible, other than Clemson. Hey, you want to change that narrative? There's only one way to do it. And that is, hey, when NC State, when you go to Mississippi State, you got to win the game. Pittsburgh, when you go to Tennessee, you got to win the game. Missouri, BC, you got to win that game. That's just the way it is. Clemson, Georgia, regardless of the outcome, those are two absolute college football playoff championship teams. That's a different story. Hey, Miami, you want to change the perception that, hey, the U's back, you tag, you're it, week one. Against Alabama. Nobody expects you to win that game outside your locker room. Nobody. And if a national perception is, oh, man, Miami's going to go and get beat by 4 touchdowns. Hey, you want to change the narrative? You have the chance. And that's what this league has to do. I mean, if you want to – we know what Clemson's all about. They're tremendous. They're great. All that good stuff. But Miami, North Carolina, NC State, all three of those teams, all three of those fan bases think that, guess what? We're going to win double digits this year. We're going to be that kind of team. Prove it. Walk it. Talk it. Get the job done. So that's what we're talking about with all this make and break where a team could be anywhere from, I don't know, 5-7 to 10-2. There's a number of those teams that fall into that category this year in the ACC.
Yeah. Let's finish this drill with Florida State. I think Mike Norvell had to play uphill with a pocket knife all year long last season. I already feel better about where they are as a program today than I did a year ago, Pac. But I look at Notre Dame as, you know what, see where you are after 60 minutes on Sunday night of Labor Day weekend. I mean, if you win, it's great. If you lose, and you a little bit like Miami and Alabama, you don't lose badly, but you lose, it's okay. You still got a lot of football left in front of you. At Wake Forest, huge game. Louisville, Syracuse at home. I mean, are we crazy to think you could be 3-2, 4-1 going to Chapel Hill the second week in October?
For me, for Florida State, this is still a work in progress. Notre Dame will be a great sense of where you are. In fact, same thing with Notre Dame, for that matter. I know they're no longer in the ACC with football for 21, but given everything they lost from a year ago, it'll be interesting to see what they have. But I look at Florida State, and the first thing that jumps out at me is their schedule. When you look at who they play on the road,
right?
I don't care how good you are, man. You're going to have your hands full when you start talking about the road trips that we're talking about for Florida State in 21. You know, I think from that perspective, you got to be realistic. Hey, can this team win 10 games? I don't think they can. Not with that schedule, with where their program mm-hmm. currently is. But at Wake Forest, I talked about that earlier with the Deacs, at North Carolina, at Clemson, at Boston College in November, and at Florida. Those are five yeah. absolutely good luck, play hard, knock your socks out. I mean, those are five difficult road games. But that Wake Forest game, September the 18th, to me, is that litmus test game for both teams. Where's this thing going? But we'll find that answer out in week three.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see kind of how it all plays out, especially that third game of the year at Wake Forest for Florida State. FPI has got them at 5.9. We'll see. Mike Norvell, you feel a lot better about where Florida State is right now, though.
Well, 5.9, you know, the whole FPI thing, I've had fun with it. But I think one of the reasons it's in the fives is because five of those road games, as I pointed out, those are legit now. You go to Switzerland, good luck. Dave Clawson's guys will be ready to go. North Carolina, no joke. Clemson, no joke. Gators, no joke. And Boston College, who I think is going to be really good at their house in November. I've seen Florida State teams go up there in November and look like they have no interest in playing. So, again, Florida State, work in progress. Yeah. You hope you're going this direction. We'll find out some more answers for that opener against Notre Dame.
I think, too, you'll hear some of those comments from Coach Norvell coming up here in the next segment in an interview we had on yesterday's show. But it's still the long game for Florida State. I'm encouraged by what I've seen, but I also understand you look at all these schedule metrics too. Georgia Tech's got the hardest schedule in the ACC and second behind Georgia Tech's Florida State. Yep. And you look at this and you know why.
Yep.
So fun to do there. Don't forget Monday night, the ACC road trip is in Derby City. Chris Cotter, Mark Richt will be there to talk to Scott Satterfield and cover the Cards Monday night, 7 o'clock, right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. And when we come back, in case you missed it yesterday, with Florida State head coach Mike Norvell, we'll talk about year two in Tallahassee after you see this on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
In Durham on a Friday, just sitting there going through a bunch of teams, best case, worst case scenarios. That included Florida State and Mike Norvell, who joined us yesterday on the program, Wes.
Yep, team takes the field tomorrow morning. They're beside Doak Campbell, and they'll get their workouts underway. Meeting today on the field tomorrow, Florida State and Louisville, the last two teams. But you know, we started our visit with Coach Norvell yesterday just saying kind of what's been the message this offseason now that you're finally able to be with your football team in kind of a normal environment.
Just the overall understanding of the expectation, you know, that having the full offseason, you've been able to see these guys be put in extremely challenging positions throughout the course of a practice. And those 15 opportunities that we got, the way they were able to respond, just the relationships that have been built and, the great work that they've done in the weight, in our strength and conditioning program and the weight room and what they're doing nutritionally. I'm really impressed with the investment that our team's making. And now we got to take that to the practice field. field, and you've seen a lot more confident team because of the work of what we put in.
Coach, I speak for Wes on this too. Neither one of us are recruiting junkies, but I will tell you, when I do dabble in it, I have noticed all of a sudden Florida State is appearing like it used to be, where you're getting 4- and 5-star kids. And I know you can't talk about them from a legal perspective and so forth, but I don't think there's any question that the brand, Florida State, has always had a great national brand. And yeah, the last couple of years, as far as wins and losses, you want to win more than you lose. I get all that. But I'm sure you're now finding out in a really short period of time as the head coach that that brand, Florida State, still brings the heat. And kids understand what it's all about in Tallahassee, playing football.
There's no question about it. I mean, this is an iconic brand. Coast to coast, this is a special place, and you'll be able to get kids on campus. Throughout the summer has been it's been remarkable. It's crazy taking the job. I didn't foresee having 15 months where we wouldn't be able to get anybody on campus. But being able to have those interactions, sharing the visions, being able to build those relationships, and for these recruits to come in and to see our players work, to be able to have those conversations it's like and the expectations of what we're asking and how we're developing our guys, there's definitely a great deal of excitement, and we're finding the right fit for Florida State, and that's something the evaluation process is critical for us, and that's something that we spend a lot of time building those relationships and excited about what the future holds.
Mike, it seems like football programs since June 1 have been all gas, no brakes, though, right? I mean, what happened to the offseason, right? You hope for a break, I guess, a little bit, but you got to recharge on the fly, it seems like, to get to September.
Yeah, I mean, but we're about the relationships, and you can do only so much there, with the virtually and with all the things recruiting, the Zoom calls. I mean, those are great and wonderful, but there's nothing like being able to get face to face with a young man and his family, mm-hmm. and to be able to have those interactions. And so we tried to maximize every moment that we had from 12:01 on June 1st. We had kids that were here on campus, and being able to share that vision, to be able to have those great experiences, it was definitely fully packed, but something that was well appreciated, and you're excited about how those things have developed throughout the course of the summer, and you're definitely looking forward to when the season starts, continuing to attract the nation's best here to Tallahassee.
Coach, you've been able to take advantage of the transfer portal too, haven't you? I mean, it gives there's a give and take with that. A lot of folks have such a negative connotation with the transfer portal, but you know what? You can also use that to your advantage.
Well, this was a unique year for us too. I mean, we're coming off a season where we're the youngest football team in all of college football, and being able to find guys that have come in. I think we have 13 transfers that have played in over 310 games that have come into our program. Yeah. That is a great deal of experience. But not only the on the field production, but who these guys are off the field, who they are, the desire that they have to make an impact, to show a proper leadership role to some of our young players, and for all of them to develop together. And that's what I've enjoyed. You look at the spring, we were able to get the majority of the transfers here, and those guys were able to start making those investments. We have a handful that have been able to come into the program here this summer. And I think just the way that it all kind of transitioned together with our youth and the opportunity that we had with the transfer portal, I think we've been able to capitalize on that and add to the competition and to the quality leadership that we want within our program.
Coach, I know he came to the kickoff, but it said a lot to me that Jermaine Johnson was in Charlotte, and just his comments and his presence led me to believe that guy is there to be a factor in your program. Not just this year, he's there to be a factor in what you're building, it looks like.
Absolutely, and he's a unique young man. He's great talent. When you meet him, you see with tremendous size, speed, the explosiveness of what he plays with. But he does have a passion to impact others in a positive way. And when Jermaine came, and we started the recruiting process, after he got in the transfer portal, that was something that was well discussed, and it was something that he embraced, that he wanted to seek out, and he's done that since the first day that he got here on campus. I challenge him daily in all things that he does, and he embraces that. But he wants to be a great example for his teammates. We've got some tremendous leaders, guys like Amari Gaynor, Fabian Lovett. Robert Cooper, guys that have done some great things here, in Tallahassee, but Jermaine's somebody that's come in and really made a great investment, and we're looking forward to what this year is going to be for him and how he's going to be able to impact our team.
Coach, we've talked a lot on our show about week one in college football, especially within the ACC and matchups. You opened with Notre Dame, and obviously the Irish last year, part of the ACC, now they come in there as a non-conference opponent. How important is the fact that, number one, you played them last year, great brand name, Sunday night, under the lights, national TV. It would seem to me it's a great incentive for your football team all spring and summer, knowing that, guess what, week one, we're not just going to kind of cruise into the season. You know, it's going to be a little smash-mouth football with the Irish coming to town. How important is that, knowing, number one, the opponent and the fact it's a big deal week one?
Well, it's what college football is all about, and those are the games you want to be a part of. And there's nothing greater than the thought of national broadcast, Florida State versus Notre Dame right here in Doak Campbell Stadium. I mean, especially coming off the year that we just had, and the things that all of the transitions and challenges that the year presented, to be able to open up here at home in a marquee matchup. You know, our guys have done a great job throughout the off season. I mean, they know what's ahead, and they know the challenge that's ahead, and we're looking forward to the opportunity. And you're definitely excited about you'll be able to kick off in the fashion that we're going to be able to here at home against Notre Dame.
Also looking forward to finding out who the starting quarterback is.
Great stuff from Mike Norvell. Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. Who's the starting quarterback going to be, and where's the offensive line on night one, right?
It's going to be fun. Going to be fun in Tallahassee now.
Oh, yeah.
Good time.
Mm-hmm. ACC Network football road trip hits the Florida State Capitol on August the 25th, in the final days of our stretch drive toward kickoff. The Noles take the practice field, by the way, again tomorrow. When we come back, best year yet, defensive line. And we pared the list down to double figures. I mean, we could have gone 16, 20. We got it to 10. We did pretty good work there. I got to tell the crew, nice job, fellas. 10 guys coming up next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, we continue our deep dive now with defensive line play. And man, this league has got some dudes on the DL now.
What do you want to do with this list? I mean, we got it to 10, and in all honesty, it could have been 16 when you think about it.
Yeah.
Clemson's going to be lights out, okay? So there's some Tigers on here, as you might expect.
Yeah.
But there are going to be some other guys on here that really you need to know if you're going to follow this league this year. We're going to start with one of the brand names in the league. Coverboy is a sophomore on some of these magazines, including our buddy Phil Steele. Brian Brzee of Clemson, who was the ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year, and rightly so. Only defensive player to get preseason player of the year votes. 23 tackles, 6.5 for loss, 4 sacks. There's a fumble there. I mean, here's another tackle. I mean, yeah, the guy is a monster. Just a monster.
And I hate to tell you this, Wes, but this is for the rest of the league. My quote-unquote sources down in Clemson, he's only bigger, stronger,
sauces,
and meaner than he was a year ago. I mean, yeah, he was just a kid out there playing and was still just making plays left and right.
Exactly. Let's go Kalijah Cansey at Pittsburgh. I mean, Jalen Twyman opted out last year, and you may hear me say this. I think there's silver linings for stuff. You know, remember 2 years ago, Rashad Weaver got hurt. Pitt still found a way. Patrick Jones kind of stepped up there. Well, Jalen Twyman opted out, and Kalijah Cansey opted into most backfields is where he opted. I mean, he is a problem. And I'm going to tag the next guy here. I'm going to put him in the same category. I think this is Roddy Jones's favorite defensive lineman in the league. Reva Hasek of North Carolina. Because, as Roddy says, turn the tape on and just watch the problems he causes. He's a perfect fit for what Jay Bateman wants to do. I mean, look at that. Watch this one.
At some point in time.
I mean, doesn't overpower you, just gets after you.
We're gonna, when you keep going through the list of these guys, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember him. Oh, yeah, I remember him. You know, going back to Kancey at Pittsburgh, but just think of the talent that Pat Narduzzi has been able to put together on the defensive front here in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I mean, the numbers don't lie.
Right.
And the National, guess who else keeps an eye on it? The National Football League, because they're like, yep, send a guy, send a guy, send a guy. Everybody we're rattling through here on this list has Sunday written all over them. Every one of them. Every single one of them. And you've got to be good on the defensive front if you think you're going to be a championship team. You're going to see you're going to see a number of names. You're going to go, man, the guy's still in the league? Yes, he is.
Yep. All right. So we gave you a household name, Brzee, right? Then we gave you Kancey and Vahasek, who are names you're going to need to know, interior guys. Here's a guy that was preseason All-ACC, Amari Barno, Virginia Tech. Why? 6.5 sacks, 16 tackles behind the line last year.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Barno, yeah. Yeah, this is a problem, too, here.
Yeah, every one of these guys.
And watch that. Spin, sack.
Yeah, and he's going up against North Carolina's entire offensive line, which is back from a year ago in week one, trying to chase out, you know, Coach Sam Howell and company. So, again, great matchups. I can't – that's what we're all excited about. Can't wait to get the first game. Let's go, man. All these tremendous players.
Yeah. You're like Dave Archer. You want to pass right through the preseason games and get right to the stuff, don't you? Let's scrap those three preseason games. Let's go to week one.
I talked to your guy Arch yesterday on the radio show, and – you know, I said, I want to hear about all this NFL preseason nonsense. Let's just get to week one, man. Week one. Let's go.
that's the way it is. Miles Murphy, probably on this list, you think? Probably deserves to be on this list, don't you think, Pac?
Guys.
For the Tigers?
Awesome.
Jeez.
Again, by the way, a sophomore. Let me keep emphasizing, you know, these guys, you keep hearing their names again. You're like, gosh. When's he going to leave the league? Well, forget leaving the league. He's only a sophomore.
Oh, look at that.
You think Dabo hit a home run on those efforts?
Wait, we only got two more left.
I know.
let's stop off in Durham. Steve Weissman yesterday pointed this guy out as maybe one of the most important players for Duke this year, Dwayne Carter.
Yep.
You look at the numbers, but remember kind of how he was standing up in traffic all the time, getting inside, things of that nature. Kind of excited to see 90 roll a little bit this year. Keep an eye on Dwayne Carter.
And also remember who Duke had last year.
Listen,
Duke had some guys on the defensive end that would cause you a problem too. So, yeah, Mr. 90 there, sitting there in the middle chewing up everybody, 100% right. He's a big-time talent.
Yep. I think Miami has a guy inside, point of attack guy. We showed you Vahasek. We've shown you Carter. How about Nesta Silvera for the Canes? Single digit. Number looks lost on the jersey. Look at him. Number one. He comes out of there. I mean, bangs a rock loose the whole bit. Good heavens. There's another one. Guy can get after you. Back to Clemson. Xavier Thomas. Only 6 total tackles last year. 3.5 sacks. 4 for loss in 5 games. Good heavens.
Wes, you know, he needs to get healthy. Last year, he really never was 100% healthy.
Yeah.
There's always been huge expectations for him. Being a 5-star all-world player. But from an athletic standpoint, when you tie him in with all these other guys, and we're not done, by the way, with Clemson Tigers on this list, they can come at you from every angle. They have got size. They have speed.
Yep.
They've got experience. I think this defensive line this year, as far as quality depth starters, it has a chance to rival what Dabo and Brent Venables had in 2018 when they just were destructive and just, I mean, they obliterated everything in their wake.
Yep.
They have the chance to be that good up front.
Yeah. So Xavier Thomas, Miles Murphy, Brian Brzee. We got one more left, but first, Jordan Dominick of Georgia Tech, who had 4 sacks and 20 tackles last year. A guy nobody talks about, 8.5 behind the line, has really kind of carved a nice niche into what Coach Thacker's trying to do on the defensive side of the ball for the Jackets.
And they got to be better on that
side. Around the football.
They got to be better on that side of the ball.
I mean, no doubt.
If we had Coach on yesterday, and we talked about all the offense and stuff, but if Georgia Tech's going to get back rolling, that side of the ball in 21 has to be better. Has to be better. Starts with that guy right there.
Mm. Yep. Yep. Sure does. Pass pressure will be crucial. All right, last one on the list, Pack. Talk about guy getting healthy and being a part of it. Tyler Davis, 14 tackles, 2 sacks, 5 for loss for Clemson.
Phew. He's a big man, too, now. 13 is a load. How about that defensive front, Wes? We just rattled through 8 and 10 guys. And we kind of split up the Clemson guys just so you didn't hear all 4 of them back-to-back-to-back-to-back to go, yikes, now what? That's why Clemson football is what it is. People talk about the offense and all that great stuff. I mean, that defensive line is going to be filthy, and they are deep.
Yep. And we're not talking about the other guys that can make an impact, backups, those type deals in the defensive line. You know they'll rotate guys through. Tyler Davis, though, 5 for loss, 2 sacks a season ago, is somebody you certainly got to believe that they are counting on at Clemson this year.
Amen to that. Good list. That's a really good list.
All of them. Yep, and great job by our crew to kind of factor in all 3 levels here today on the defensive side of the ball. Fun thing to do, fun exercise this year for this week for best year yet. More to come here in our final segment. Pack's going to pay off that bar bet we told you about from week 1 about Hall of Famers in Canton from the ACC. Plus, we welcome a new member to the ACC Network family. We'll do all that and more when we continue. Packer and Durham on an ACC Network Friday.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a week that it's gotten better as the week's gone on, quite frankly, which is good. Mr. Durham, we got a little bar bet to pay off. We started the show today talking about Canton, Ohio, and 4 ACC, former ACC members, if you will, jumping on board this weekend with Edgerrin James and Jimbo Covert and Calvin Johnson and Bill Cowher. Congratulations to those guys. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned with Edgerrin James, 9 Miami Hurricanes are now going to be in the Hall, but there's one other ACC team that when you go through this list may grab your attention and you go, son of a gun, I would have never guessed they've got that many. And it's been kind of a teased bar bet today on the program.
Well, ironically, that school gets to 9 this weekend, right?
Yep.
Because they've got one going in. So the Miami 9, you really can kind of think about it from what, like 75 on, right? I mean, there's some early ones. Ted Hendricks obviously played in the 60s there. Things of that nature. I mean, you go back and look at Miami's list. Ted Hendricks is the one from the 60s. Then it starts Michael Irvin, Edgerrin James, Jim Kelly, Cortez Kennedy, Ray Lewis, Jim Otto, the great Raider, 00. He would have been a 60s guy. Ed Reed, Warren Sapp, and obviously Edgerrin James. But who's going in this weekend to give them 9? I think this is surprising. People don't think about Pittsburgh that way, do they? And it's the University of Pittsburgh has 9. But you start thinking about the list at Pitt, Mike Ditka. I mean, it's there.
No doubt.
Pitt has 9. Syracuse has 8, Pac.
Yeah. And I think that is a great bar bet for any ACC fan. You say, listen, name the top 3 in the league. How many would get Miami, Pitt, Syracuse? How many? Seriously. I mean, you'd think, because everybody, I think, would immediately think maybe Miami would be, you know, branding. I think a lot of folks would think Florida State, too, given their incredible run and so forth. But there are the numbers right there in front of you on the screen. Miami, Pitt, Syracuse are the top 3 in the ACC.
Yep.
Pretty impressive.
By the way, Calvin Johnson becomes the 3rd Georgia Tech alum. Indian Joe Guyon early in the 1920s played for John Heisman, then had a pro career back when pro football was a totally different animal, as they say. The 3rd Georgia Tech alum to be inducted is Billy Shaw, who became the first player, Pack, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame to play his entire career exclusively in the old AFL, played in Buffalo.
About that.
Nice man. I saw him this summer again. He's a wonderful, wonderful, warm gentleman. And always Billy keeps up. He told me this summer he keeps up with his – he goes to fast pitch softball to watch his granddaughter play. He said – he goes, that's all the fun this Hall of Famer can stand now is fast pitch softball.
It's all good.
I said, good for you, Billy.
Yeah,
good for
right.
you.
It's all good.
Yep, it's all good. So congratulations to all the ACC folks. Just shared a text with E.J. Borghetti, who – said Jimbo Covert is so well-deserved and, in some cases, overdue. Was a great player on those Bears teams for sure.
It was fantastic.
All right, Olympic connections in the ACC. We've been keeping you up to date on that. Miami alum and former Charlotte Knight Eddie Alvarez is part of the Team USA baseball that plays Japan tomorrow for the gold medal. So we get Eddie Alvarez, and then Miami native, I should say, not an alum. So Eddie Alvarez tomorrow, gold medal in baseball. That's at 6 in the morning if you're inclined. Also, in terms of the ACC, Emily Maher of Virginia Tech has made it to the women's AM in the quarterfinals. She'll play today at 1:20 Eastern time against Jensen Castle. Emily is the last of the ACC competitors standing at the Westchester Country Club, which, by the way, looks very adequate, Mark. Looks like a decent setup they got there.
To my knowledge, the U.S. amateur normally goes to nice places. You don't normally see the United States Golf Association picking goat ranches to conduct their championships. It's kind of like when conferences around the country decide to have their conference meetings. It's normally at places like Amelia Island and Palm Springs. And it's very seldom do you say, hey, we're gathering in Topeka, Kansas this weekend at the local Waffle Hut and going on. I mean, that normally doesn't happen.
They're not going to the Raccoon Run or the Gator Hole at Myrtle Beach to play the U.S. Women's Amateur? Is that right?
I've always found that the U.S. Golf Association – picks pretty nice locations to conduct their championships.
Not going down there to play John Daly's Wicked Stick, are they?
No,
they're kind of playing it at a pretty good spot.
Yeah, that's normally how that plays out. But we wish Emily the very best. And, of course, the ACC's was well represented in this USAM. But again, match play is a different beast. It's a totally different beast. So we'll see how it plays out this weekend.
That's it. We also, this morning, welcome a new member to the ACC Network family. For folks who live in Western or Central Kentucky, Northern Indiana, Southwest Georgia, Northeastern North Carolina, and the ACC footprint, great to have Mediacom joining the ACC Network lineup here soon, just in time for the start of football. So not only do you get all the great daily stuff, all ACC, in play, the road trip, things like that, you're going to get ACC football and old Packer and Durham coming up in September. So if you live in any of those areas and you got friends that are Mediacom subscribers, tell them to be on the lookout for the ACC Network. That's good news. The first of what we hope is more good news on the arrival of some new members to our ACC Network availability list. And so welcome Mediacom. Also very big in Iowa, I might add.
I was also given a note about MediaCom that they apparently have a channel in their lineup dedicated to keep dogs company when they're home alone. So I am already pro MediaCom.
Okay.
Chester and Fuller approve. Okay. MediaCom's addition here to ACC Network.
All right.
Excellent.
You're going to get some sort of special digital access to Dog TV. Is that right?
You know, I have found, interestingly enough,
boys are like that.
The boys, Chester doesn't watch TV. Chester, I mean, he'll see himself on the monitors that we have down there. Every now and then he'll catch himself and go like, yeah, okay, great, whatever. Fuller, on the other hand, is totally into watching TV. Mm. And he loves tennis. And any show that involves any kind of dog or animal, he is dialed in. And he will sit there and watch it. And Amy and I will sit here and just laugh like crazy. So Fuller is totally dialed into it. Chester, nah, not so much. Not so much.
If you've ever seen Fuller go get a tennis ball, you're not surprised that Fuller watches tennis.
Yeah, well, there's just tennis.
However,
right,
it also begs the question why the big black lab hasn't destroyed a television set either, chasing the tennis ball.
That's a good point. Well, we got it raised up to the point where big man's not going to go through the screen, but he will sit there and watch a tennis match. Yeah. If Wimbledon, French Open, U.S. Open's on, Mrs. P is going to watch Roger Federer, and my man Fuller will be right there at her side watching every stroke. Every stroke. Crazy.
Yeah. All right. We're on full countdown now. Florida State and Louisville hit the practice field tomorrow. That'll be the last two of the 14 ACC schools to get fall camp underway. So next week we'll have full reports from just about each and every campus on the early stages of football practice. Thanks to Brian Ives and Chan Gailey for joining us. Congratulations to all the ACC inductees this weekend in Canton at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The road trip tonight is in Chapel Hill, 7 o'clock Eastern time, with Chris Cotter and Eric McClain visiting with Mac Brown and the Tar Heels. Good week, Mark. Great to have you back. Thanks to Drew and Josh and everybody. Right? Good week of stuff.
Yep. Good. It's good to be out of the bed and upright, which is a beautiful thing. And again, many thanks to all that who had sent a well wish and all that good stuff. I appreciate it very much. Great stuff.
All right. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning at 7 a.m. on Packer and Durham here on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.